So we'll start with the Jewish holidays. So before the Jewish holidays, the Jewish calendar. So we know the solar calendar, January, February, March, April. That's the, there's 365 days in a year and change. On a Jewish lunar calendar, 354 days. So therefore, so we have 11 days less every month. So in contrast to other religions, let's say Islam, they only have a lunar calendar. That's why, if you might have noticed, it took me a while to pick up on it, but they only have the lunar calendar. So if you only follow a lunar calendar, there are no seasons. What I mean to say is, of course, there are seasons. Summer seems to be coming, spring, summer, fall, and winter. What I mean to say is, their holidays aren't linked to any season. Ramadan, I think, just ended. So I guess now, I guess they weren't too happy, because what I'm just saying, tongue in cheek, is because they fast on Ramadan, so I assume they like when the day's over at 5 o'clock than it is at 9 o'clock, and it's cooler. Don't knowing, I have my own fast days, so I know we have two in the summer. They're very long, as opposed to other ones where, you know, different times. So what I mean to say is Ramadan falls out any time of the year, but it's, therefore it could come out in the summer, winter. In contrast to the Jewish holidays, is we have seasons. But how can we have seasons if we have a lunar calendar? How can we control it? So it's what I call a solar correction. It's already set up. I could just look it up, but it happens. It's about three times every 19 years. So, I mean, no, it's seven times every 19 years, a little less than every 3 years. We add another month. So on the solar calendar, we add Feb 29 once in a while, one day. On the Jewish calendar, we add a whole month, 29 days. So therefore, we figure it out when the holidays get too close to going over the season, we have a leap year. So it turns out just about once every 3 years, we have a leap year. That's why on the English calendar, you might notice is, like, I'll give you this since you're just starting. So the next major holiday, we're going to be full of holidays in September. The Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. So generally, I'd say on a regular year, you probably mix like halfway to September into the middle of October. This year is an extreme because, you know, it's right before the leap year. So what we do is, it just turns out that way, all the holidays, it's going to start Labor Day weekend, that Monday night, and by September 28th, all the Jewish holidays will be over. So therefore, once you finish September, so October, no, you know, you'll have like Hanukkah, other ones, but they won't, not the major ones. So they're going to be over. So they'll be over in September this year. So it's, of course, it happens on the right time. It's this early on our calendar. So they point out that, so that's what we, so therefore, we have to keep Passover in the spring. We have to keep this holiday, Sukkot, Tabernacles, in the fall. So that's why we take both. We take the lunar calendar and the solar calendar. Why do we combine both calendars? What's the philosophy? What's the theology behind it? So the concept is, what is the sun? We know sunrise, sunset. So we see that if you know where to look every day, you know, there's even a song, you know, sunrise, sunset. But try finding the moon at night. Half the month is not visible. The other half, it's waxing bigger and smaller. So the sun represents stability. You know exactly, it rises and it sets the same, you know, the same place. And the moon represents flexibility, creativity. You have no idea what to expect. So like in life, we need a little of both. Or a lot of both. And everyone needs a roof over the head, you need food on the table, you need clothes, everyone needs the basics of life. That's what the sun represents. But if all you have is the basics and all you're just going through life doing the same thing all the time, life's going to become boring. So therefore, you have to add creativity to your life. You could be doing the same job, but you got to find newness in your job, or in your case, it's changing jobs, whatever it might be. But we all need, we're all human beings. We need to fulfill both parts of our life. We have to fulfill, you know, the stability part. That's what the sun represents. And the moon represents change, and we always have to find the right balance. You know, to go on a camping trip your whole life, it probably isn't a good idea. To go on a vacation for a week might be a great idea. It's everything in moderation, everything in time. So that's the Jewish calendar. And then, as I said, we have a couple of minor holidays, or I should say, we have a couple of minor fast days coming up, which you won't be affected by because they're elderly people and sick, so they're not going to be... During fast days, there won't be any difference because the people here... This, like in Judaism, one's life takes precedence over everything. So if you're stuck on a desert island and the only food is McDonald's, which isn't kosher, then of course you eat it. The point being is, you know, all things being equal, we have the kosher rules, which we'll get to shortly, so a Jew is obligated to eat kosher. Again, let me point out, like all religions, not every Jew keeps kosher. You need to have observing, less observing, like any religion. You know, Islam, so people keep... I'm just saying what the idea was. We're in the non-judgmental zone, who keeps whatever they want to keep, but I'm just explaining in terms of what the rules are. So they point out... So of course, over here, we're talking about elderly people, so they're not going to fast. I mean, I'm not saying you don't have any. You have a couple ones who are healthier, and if they want to, they can. Maybe they'll fast a little bit, but from the kitchen point of view, we're going to serve the food. If they don't want to eat, they don't have to come to the dining room. And besides the fact, we have many Gentiles here, so they have no reason to fast in the first place. So the bottom line is the major one will be Yom Kippur, but again, that's going to be in September, and some people in the apartment might take dinner to go, you know, whatever or something like that. But it's not even those people, like they're 80, 90, people are sick, so just like we say, we have a commandment to fast. If your life is in danger, you have a commandment to eat. It's not like that. Oh, that's it. You have to fast. That's not the way it works. Obviously, which, you know, every situation is different, and if it's going to affect your life, then obviously there's nothing more important than that. Because if you did, you can't serve God anyway. You can't serve anyone. So therefore, obviously, the goal is to be healthy and to stay alive. And therefore, you have different rules. But obviously. Obviously, part of kosher is being healthy. So therefore, as well, as we'll see. So that's the Jewish holidays. Let's move on to kosher, since you'll be dealing with kosher. So it says in the Bible, the Old Testament, it talks about the characteristics of kosher. So the popular misconception of kosher is they think it's the rabbi blessing the food. That is totally incorrect. I wish that was true. That would be great for me. I could I could go to any store and make a blessing and make it kosher. It's not that simple. It is true in Judaism, we make blessings before and after we eat. But that's because before we make a blessing, the food belongs to God. And after we eat, we have to thank God, you know, gratitude He gave us the food. So we make plenty of blessings, but it has nothing to do with kosher. Kosher is the following. Let's say the characteristics in the Bible are, for an animal, it has to chew its cud and split hooves, like a cow, calf, sheep, goat. Those are animals that have split hooves. I believe the Muslims also go with those definitions as well. That's why they have something similar, not the same, but halal, you might see, C-H-A-L-L. That's the equivalent, that's the kosher equivalent. Interesting, there's a debate in the Quran about whether, one place it says you always have to have halal, another place it says that if you make a blessing, speaking of blessings, maybe for them it works, If you make a blessing, it's okay. You can have your chicken nuggets at McDonald's as long as you make a blessing beforehand. But be it as it may, and I hear observant Muslims who can't find halal, they eat kosher. Doesn't work for us. We can't eat halal. That's just the way it is. We have similar slaughtering practices, but many differences that it's not going to work. So, but it's saying, but that's halal is the equivalent, even though for kosher is much more encompassing in terms of what you can't do and what you have to do. But so therefore, chew its cut and split hooves. That's the first step. And then it talks about birds, chickens. That makes it much harder. It gives a list of 24 non-kosher birds. The problem is, they're talking about thousands of years ago. Like, who knows what bird? I'm not a bird doctor, so who knows what birds are what? So we have to go on tradition. So chicken, turkey, lamb, all those type of things, will be kosher, as you'll see. And then regarding fish is all you need is fins and scales. So salmon, tuna, trout, sole, and a couple of other ones that come to mind. Those are any fish that's... So when it comes to meat, red meat, and, I'd say chicken to a certain extent, it's much more work. Like, there's a kosher butcher not far from here by next to the Food Basics a block down. So, but the food here, you won't have to worry. The food that comes here, it's already kosher. Boy, all you have to do is spice it up and then put it in the oven. Back in the day, we live in a world of convenience today. So back in the day, you had to go find someone to slaughter the animal properly. And there's a whole big, we can't have the blood of the animal. You have to soak out the blood. It was a whole long process. So I'm saying, but that's the first step. If it doesn't chew its cud or if it split hooves, the game is over. It's never going to become kosher. Then you have to slaughter it properly. You got to salt it out, get the blood. Then there's a whole long process. But when you walk into here, it's going to be kosher ready. Or if you go to Fortino's on the West End, the Main Street West, they have a kosher section also. It comes in plastic. You take it out and you cook it. The only difference is it'll probably be double the price of regular meat, but it's going to be in that. It'll be in the store. So the bottom line is So kosher, it's a whole part of the you need those kosher animals, but you have a whole process. Fish on one hand, same thing with chicken. Fish on one hand is a little easier. Like, as long as you know it has fins and scales, you can just cut it up and eat it. However you prepare. In other words, you could go, if you know how to fish, and you go fishing and you're kosher, you could probably live off a fish diet. You just catch fish and then you take care of it. But if it's meat and chicken, it's much more... different. So there's kosher. In addition to being kosher, so there's not mixing meat and milk, which would be a big one. So in the nursing home, generally speaking, breakfast and lunch are dairy, are milk, and dinner is meat. So therefore, they're gonna have different dishes. There'll be a different. You have different sides of the kitchen. In your kitchen, it's basically one with this kosher in between. But we have, you're not going to be preparing the food, but you have in the big kitchen, so they have the dairy section, milk. You'll have to serve on different dishes, and it's a different dishwasher. They have a dishwasher in the dining room, and you have to make sure, you have the right forks, knives, etc. This, by the way, in general, it's okay. Everyone, we're all human. We all make mistakes. It's expected. And, because especially doing something you're not used to doing. So the issue is, the problem is if you hide the mistake, that's not good. But you just have to, you'll tell whoever or just come to me and tell me, look, I made a mistake. I took the milk knife instead of the meat. Then I can take care of it. There's a koshering process, in the word. So, because basically if you don't tell, basically it's like spiritual poison. So you're making people, you're causing harm to all the people who are trying to eat kosher. So, there's no as always, hiding the mistake is much worse than the mistake itself. And you know, everyone make mistake in my own house. You know, you take something, you're not thinking, you pull something, so don't worry about it. You know, obviously, be careful. Don't do it intentionally. But mistakes are going to happen. It's not a this. You know, you either give it to Manoff, you met Phil Cohen, whoever. I'm just saying, you put it. You tell your whoever, if you see me around, or if you see the person, whoever you're working with, just tell them, this isn't kosher. What do I do with it? You know, it'll end up by me by the end of the day, whoever's going to give it to me. Or they might have a place in the kitchen they keep it. So don't worry about mistakes. You know, of course they're going to happen. It's the, and but they could be corrected. So it's not, you know, don't worry about it. And then, so therefore, we have separate, so in, and in the apartments where you'll be working, basically they only have dinner. So every night of the week is meat, except for Wednesday night. Wednesday night is dairy, so I turn over the kitchen on Wednesday morning, Tuesday night. And as well, and again, so fish really is not meat and not dairy. So let's say fish, it could be either way. Like if they have fish in the, at lunchtime, the fish is parv, but they're gonna probably make it in a milk pot, so we'll treat it as milk. Similarly, if they have fish Sunday night, even though the fish itself, but we're going to be making everything on the meat. So functionally, we're going to treat it as the meat, but know that fish is different than chicken and meat. You know, chicken and meat are labeled meat for Jewish purposes, and fish is quote unquote par, meaning you could have it. It could be either meal. You could. It just depends. You have to decide beforehand to know what pots and pans you want to use, and then. Like you have vegetables, anything natural comes out of the ground is kosher and para. But let's say tomatoes, cucumbers, avocado, broccoli, all these vegetables and fruits, they're all kosher by definition. In other words, you can't go in and use your knife at home, cut it up and bring it into the kosher areas. It's still, I'm just saying it, but in terms of in the kitchen, so you could serve fruit at any meal. Again, you know, obviously, if it's going to be a milk meal, you use a, it'll be cut up with a milk knife, and if it's a meat, but there's certain foods which are interchangeable, you could use for both meals. Clearly, dairy can't be used in a meat meal, and meat can't be used in a dairy meal, because it says in the Bible, we can't mix milk and meat. One of the reasons given for it is because meat represents death. You slaughter an animal. Milk, you milk the animal, and you milk the cow. Milk's considered the life of the animal. So in Judaism, we want to keep a separation of life and death. We don't want the separation of church and state. We don't want the same people in, you know, in control, so to speak. It's very dangerous. So therefore, milk represents life, and therefore we keep them separate. And as a general rule, water, besides the religious significance of the, and because the Bible says we have to do it because we're holy, etc., this on a very pragmatic level, one of the reasons behind it is there was a Stanford study, nothing to do with kosher. I'll get to kosher shortly. I think it was called the marshmallow test. But if you like chocolate, you could put in chocolate, you could put in ice cream, whatever your favorite treats are. But this was a marshmallow test where it was, I think it was children, but we're all, you know, adults in the same way, but this is what the test was. They put a marshmallow, they, I don't know, 10-year-old, whoever the child was, I don't know, and they put him in, they said, here's a marshmallow, we're putting it on a plate. If you don't eat the marshmallow for 5 minutes, we'll give you a whole pack. And they didn't know it was a double glass window. They could see him, but he couldn't see them or she. So they watched, they observed these people. So some, for 30 seconds, and they just downed the marshmallow, you know, totally no control. Others waited a minute, some like picked off on the bottom, some licked it and put it back, the usual. Okay, you know, they did this study, nothing to do with kosher. And then what they did was, they followed these people around, not like they knew that, like they were part of a test. They didn't follow them without them knowing. You know, they tracked their lives. And for the next 15, 20 years, maybe 25 years, and they found out, no to no surprises, the children who showed self-control and held off, and they didn't need to, they they couldn't wait, 5 minutes until they gave in to their desires. So the people who were able to wait, they did much better in life. Those who gave in, couldn't wait to 5 minutes, needless to say, weren't too successful. Because if you don't have any self-control in life, whatever you do, it's not. Everyone needs some self. We could discuss where the line is, but everyone agrees everyone has to have some self-control. You can't. That's what animals do. They want something to do it right away. So we're human beings, so therefore there's an element of sometimes you have to hold off on the pleasure until later, whatever it is. Every adult knows that. So that's really, so in that sense, there's this element of self-control in kosher. Like, when I travel, I plan beforehand. I know am I going to find a kosher place? I have to bring food with me, because who knows? Again, depending where I'm traveling, if I know where I'm, that I know before, so I'll bring kosher food with me. I'll know if I stop off at different gas stations, so I might know the ice cream could be kosher or some drinks. But in general, if I want to bring food, real food, I eat chicken, fish, meat, whatever, I know I have to bring it on my own. That's part of, you can't just walk into any store and eat it. So it's part of self-control. In fact, it reminds me of a story. I was up in it was a big supermarket in New York. It wasn't a kosher supermarket, but 90% of the food was kosher. It was a big Jewish area, so they had a lot of kosher food. So I was waiting online, and this woman, who let's say clearly didn't look Jewish to me, so she's in front of me, and she has this, why they put it in the supermarket? They put the gum and the candy because they want the kids to grab at it, and then they're going to make a big scene, so you're not going to tell them, so they'll end up getting more business. Or even adults, so this comes, you're waiting online, you'll grab the paper, you'll take some candy. So the son was pulling it, like every 10-year-old kid's doing, and I'm not saying he was any different, so the mother was telling him not to, and then all of a sudden she started screaming. She said, "Tyrone, it's not kosher." So I was right behind her. A couple of minutes, I said, "Oh, by the way, are you kosher? Are you Jewish?" She said, "No." So I said, "Why were you telling him it's not kosher then?" She said, "Because I see all these Jewish mothers, they scream at their kids, and when they say it's not kosher, it works. They stop eating. So I figured I'd try it with him." The point being is, if you're trained on what you can eat, what you can't eat, it's an element of self-control, which prepares you for life in general. That's behind commandments in general. God gave us commandments we can do and not do, and that's in life. Knowing things you can do and what you we have laws in society, but in addition to the laws of society, Judaism has additional rules as well. So the F of kosher is an element of self-control, but obviously the rules are based on God's words, and therefore it's a much more spiritual thing. It could be kosher. People have the misconception that, it's kosher, it must be healthy. Not necessarily, it could be, but kosher has nothing to do with health. Obviously they're different. Let me just explain. If you're kosher and you slaughter the animals, then maybe you only eat certain animals, so maybe you have a less chance of getting those diseases with the meats that come out. But that's a side point. Meaning in general, you could have the same piece of meat and put non-healthy things on it. But obviously, in Judaism, we want you to eat healthy. I'm just saying is kosher doesn't mean it. You could have kosher chocolate, kind candy, those are, that's not healthy. But I'm just saying is obviously, as a Jew, you're supposed to be healthy. As a human being, I'm sure you're supposed to be healthy. But it's a special rule. In addition, you have to take care of yourself. But, not to be confused with kosher is much more is spiritual and ritualistic. And of course, we always try to eat healthy, but that's not the straight. You can't have unkosher. You can't have kosher, unhealthy food. They're not contradictory. So that's the kosher. And that's what you'll see on many of the things in the supermarkets are probably kosher without you knowing it. As I said, all the vegetables and fruits. But let's say you go to speaking of unhealthy. Let's say you go to the chip section. So again, you have to look, but a lot of the Miss Vickies and Lay's, a lot of them have kosher signs on them. Some might be dairy, some might be parv. So like this MK, not Michael Kors, Montreal Kosher. So they have, or you'll see a COR, that's for Toronto. There'll be OU. I think in the kitchen we have the different basic symbols in turn. But you know, you shouldn't have to worry because everything here should already become, you know, should be coming in kosher anyway. But those, you know, those are the different in symbols in terms of that. So therefore, so in practically speaking, so of course you could, you don't have to change the way you eat at home. You could continue eating non-kosher. But and especially if you want to bring in your lunch from home, that's fine. You just can't do it, certainly not in the kitchen or dining room. There are designated non-kosher rooms. You know, all the staff rooms are not kosher because it's, by the way, 99.99% of the staff isn't Jewish. There's only two of us. So everyone's going to be, you know, so it's not, everyone eats non-kosher, which is fine. The point is you can't eat it on Sholem Village's, like dish, you know, you can't take out your ham sandwich and, you know, maybe ham you shouldn't be bringing or not, but it's okay. But you shouldn't be, you can't put it on your plates, on the Sholem Village plates and all that. So it's more functionally like it, and if people, and also if you're gonna give people, probably if you're gonna give people food in their room, so then everything goes on paper. Because even the Jewish residents, some are kosher, some aren't, and the different standards. So we have a general rule. We don't, the Sholem Village dishes don't leave the dining room area or kitchen area. And if you find dishes outside the area, so then you just, you know, you put them in the non-kosher section, I'll come and kosher them. You know, once in a while, there might be an exception if the person, the PSW or someone is actually literally taking the food and serving it to them, you know, so then, but generally speaking, that's the rule that, you know, you shouldn't bring any of the silverware dishes or cups anytime outside the designated kosher areas. Even if the person says they're kosher, it doesn't make a difference what they say. Number one is, how would you know? Like, it's not, you're not going to tell a Jewish, like, that's not kosher. Like, they don't want to hear from you, and like, they don't, you know, they might not know what kosher is anyway. So it's kind of like a health policy. Like, I can't bring my food into a restaurant. There's nothing to do with, we don't even have to deal with kosher, which it is a factor, but it's a health, like Hamilton Health. You can't have someone bring their own food in. You don't know where it's from. So even without the kosher issue, I mean, you can't bring in outside food anyway. But certainly with kosher, that's an added factor. So that's the Jewish holidays, the kosher. Any questions so far? And just, you know, and then I guess the third, I guess you might notice on some of the doors, on the doorpost, they have, when you walk in, you'll see like, it's called the mezuzah, M-E-Z-Z-U-A-H. It's a parchment from the Bible. And on one level, it's there as a protection. It comes from when the Jews were in Egypt, and on the night of Passover, God protected them, the houses that had the sign on the doorpost. So we have a Torah parchment inside. It's a level of protection. But also, it's always on a slant whenever you possible. It's not vertical or horizontal. The teacher said anytime, it's true for any home, but anytime you walk into a Jewish home, the first thing you have to realize is you got to compromise. It can't be your way or the highway. Symbolically, you see the mezuzah on a slant, and there, but to show, you know, in order to have peace, one has to be flexible, you know, whether it's spouses, parents and kids, good old roommates, it doesn't make a difference. To get along with people, a person has to be less rigid and more flexible. Yeah. Any questions?